This is Beyond the Divide, traversing the experiences in the world of disability. I'm Harrison Kirkwood, your host for this podcast series, produced by Singleton Council and proudly supported by the New South Wales State Government. Matt Box is a man passionate about mental health, youth work and disability. He has a keen interest in many sports and fitness. He also likes creative writing and has an artistic flair. He's recently a new father and has lots of perspectives to share on an inclusive world. Hi, Matt. How are you going?
Harry, thanks, mate. Hey, what an introduction, man. Talk me up. I'll come anytime.
No worries. It's all true and valid. So, Matt, overall, what was your childhood like, just in general?
Yeah, so it's funny you say that. I've done a lot of reflecting. So my son just turned one, and something that happened for me, and I think a lot of parents, is it's almost like you re-parent yourself as when you become a father. So I've definitely kind of reflected back on my childhood. There's a lot of positives. So I grew up on 5 acres. So, you know, I had talking about sport, I had some soccer goals in the backyard. We rode motorbikes, had a swimming pool. So I got to get outdoors a lot. One of 4 siblings. So I'm a twin, not identical though. And I grew up with my younger sister was born deaf and my older brother was born with Down syndrome. So I'm a special needs sibling. And I think that's definitely shaped who I am as a person. So definitely had that perspective growing up, and it probably definitely led me to where I am today and who I am today.
Yeah, wow. Thanks for sharing that. We should share some commonalities in our journeys, actually. You know, I grew up on acreage out of town at Westbrook near Singleton, lived on sort of, you know, 25 acres. So we both had that sort of childhood of connection to nature and activities and active lifestyle. And I'm the youngest of 4 siblings too, all boys though my line. And me having my own disability, I guess we also shared that experience about disability in the family unit and how that affects the family unit's connection and journey in society.
Yep.
So Matt, you mentioned your older brother had Down syndrome. What was that like for him and the family? Did the family have much experience of disability before your brother came along?
Not that I know of. To answer the first part of your question, it was an absolute blessing, and I'll probably elaborate on that more as we talk today. In terms of, I think my parents or the family's experience, back in the early 80s, it was next to none. So I still recall, my mum tells me stories of when my brother was born at the hospital and the nurses asked him what institution they were going to place him in. So, and just through my research, apparently between the 1920s and 70s and probably a bit beyond that, is kids that were born with disabilities were placed in institutions and essentially hidden from society a bit. So in the 1980s, that reduced to only 10% of children born with disabilities, and in the 90s, it reduced down to 1%. So, yeah, in the early 80s, when my brother was born, it was, you know, kind of in that era, and where my mum's response was probably in a bit of shock, and she's Italian, so it would have been a bit of that, you know, fiery Italian of like, no, he's coming home with me, you know, we're going to raise this boy. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think there would have been a lot of support back then, and they definitely did it on their own. And I think particularly with Down syndrome, I think my brother had major heart surgery within the first few 6 months, I believe, or the first few couple of years of his life, which is, so heart defects can be quite common. So there would have been a lot of, you know, hospital trips and a lot of adversity there. But yeah, his character, he was the most lovable person you'll ever meet, and absolute blessing to be his brother and for him to be a part of our family. And I can't ever imagine that we ever put kids like that in institutions. So part of me, and, you know, it's such a privilege to be here on this podcast, is to advocate for people with disabilities and what we can learn from people, all types of people.
And it's a reality check in some ways. In the current day and age with disability and inclusion in society, some things are still a shock horror, you know, where we're at and where we still need to get to. But I guess when we reflect on the years gone by, from the 1980s to now, we have made significant and major shifts towards disability inclusion, you know, from 40 years ago, still expecting that people with disabilities would be in institutions, to today's day and age where we're trying to get more people with disabilities into the workforce. higher education and be involved in more aspects of community life. There has been a big progression, although the journey is not complete.
Yeah, yeah, that's a definitely good way to put it. I think there's definitely some stigma there, but even again, looking at, I think in 1950, the life expectancy of someone with Down syndrome was only 12 years old. Now it's 60.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, we've come a very long way. And you know, there's people with Down syndrome living independently, have professional careers. It's absolutely amazing where we are now. Yeah.
And I think those comments, absolutely it is. And those comments also by the nurse saying your brother, what institution would he go into, also reflects, I guess, how society's attitude to change from people. And back at that time, you know, there was just an uncertainty. And as a result of that uncertainty, how hard families had to work to provide and give their child with a disability the best life possible. Of course, that's what they're fully invested in, and their heart was centered on doing that. But, you know, there wasn't much support from society, and they had to face so many different attitudes.
Yeah, for sure.
It's amazing how that journey has progressed and how different it is today. So tell us a bit more about your brother, Matt. What was his character like? Mm. You've alluded to that a little bit already, but
yeah. Part of the way I explain it is, he was a child at heart. So he lived, he passed away at 27 years young. I always kind of compare him to the real life example of Robin Williams in the movie Jack and Tom Hanks in Big, who were adults, who were basically like a child in an adult's body. So that was my brother. So when I would take him for a drive, he would bring along his favorite CD, which was usually Queen's Greatest Hits. And as soon as we got in the car, the windows were wound down, no matter how cold it was outside. And the music was turned up to the highest possible volume. So even though my speakers would like crackle because they were pretty crappy speakers, but I would turn it down and he would turn it right back up again. So it was just like just a party 24/7. And any mundane kind of situation, he would turn into a celebration. So he taught me to really enjoy life and embrace the moment. And so that was just one example. So I think he taught me, growing up by his side, I learnt to grow up and never grow old.
Yeah, an infectious state of happiness, it sounds like.
100%.
And his music flair was everyone else's music preference too.
Yeah, 100%. So even I ended up, this was after he passed, and I got into youth work, but I ended up becoming a teacher at the same school that we went to as kids. And even this was years after he had even been there, and this was 15 years after I'd first walked through the school gates as a student in year seven. So it was definitely long after I'd graduated as well. And I remember the principal introduced me in front of all the teachers at a staff meeting. I felt like I was on detention because all my old teachers were there.
Yeah.
And the principal says, "Oh, can anyone remember who this student is?" And, you know, a few teachers nodded and said, "Yes, who are my teachers?" But it wasn't until someone said, "Oh, you're Foxy's little brother." And then the whole room knew who I was then, and all of the teachers came up to me and told me how much they still remembered Gaz and how much that he was the life of the school. So, yeah, definitely I agree with what you said about having that infectious personality and the life of the party and just making everyone happy for sure.
Yeah. It seems to be the way often in society that good or bad, that disability is the factor that can identify a person and sort of connect people with the memories of that person. Even despite perhaps how much that person is fully included, I guess, in society. So do you have any ideas, Matt, on how we can better improve inclusion for people with disabilities in society so they're generally actually participating and engaged rather than perhaps just their presence noted?
Yeah, wow. Great question. I think the more people that share their story, there's probably 100 different ways, but I think, you know, and I look back many years ago now, but I'd take my brother shopping and I'd hold his hand as we walked down the shops, and just the stares you'd get from people, just it felt like hatred. I don't think it was. I think it was just like ignorance. And you used the word before about like uncertainty, and it's like people fear what they don't know. So I think people just didn't know about Down syndrome. So they were just staring going, "Oh, who's this? What's going on?" But it definitely came across in that negative light. So now I think Kmart has, I think, kids with Down syndrome on their advertisements. So, and we've come a long way now from integrating people with disabilities. I don't like using the word disability. That's probably where I would start, is that I think as a society we look at the deficits we look at what people can't do and what they're unable to do. But my brother was able to do far more than he was unable to do. And he was able to do things that I couldn't do. So, and this is one of the things that used to always get me is, you know, there was the perception that I was born with an able body and mind that, and my brother wasn't normal. But then if that was the case, then why could he love other people unconditionally and not judge people who were different? Whereas I did, I judged people. So who's the one that's disabled? Who's the one that's not able to do things, you know? So that, I think that's how I would change that perception in society is look at people's abilities and kind of maybe look at my deficits a bit as well.
The idea of this spoken normal that's really been undefined for many decades, this concept that, you know, normal is fully abled, I guess that white educated persona, but it's really normal is more than that, even on the outside and the inside, different, you know, backgrounds, different cultures, different ethnicities, different abilities, but really at the end of the day, that's what's visible on the outside. But on the inside, we all have different values, different interests, different hopes, different struggles. And so none of us are really the same, but we normalize ourselves based on what we can see at the outset, I guess.
That's a great way to put it, that none of us are the same. There's like individual people make up the culture that we're in. So, and definitely I think what's normal, and that's probably why I started to question that, if my brother wasn't normal, then I don't want to be normal. Like, what is normal? So even I remember at high school, it was normal to tease people who were different just to make yourself feel better. And I'm like, that's not cool. Like, why is that normal?
No.
And I think there's things today that we accept as normal. So I think learning from, like you said, learning from different cultures and individuals and people with different abilities can all make us better and stronger.
So some of these experiences with your brother and your sister and your work drove you to be writing a book, Matt.
Yeah.
Can you
yeah.
tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I'm still writing. I'm probably at the process of editing it now. And to be honest, I never intended to write a book or become an author. For me, it started as a process of dealing with the grief after my brother died, and it started as a journal. So I knew that I wanted to – I had such the privilege. I had a front row seat to who I considered to be the most amazing human being ever to set foot on this earth, you know, and I wanted to make sure that his story got told like through the ages. And so for me, even just for my personal benefit and peace of mind, I wanted to remember who he was and who he taught me so that I could kind of live like he was by my side still. And so, yeah, it was a Saturday afternoon and I just started writing down probably the most vivid stories that I remember. And then I started putting those principles into practice. And then I think the journal just grew and grew. And as I got more into youth work and I had more stories that I had kind of gathered and more research, and what started out as 400 words is now 40,000 words. And I think it's a message that is too important not to share.
And what's the book called, or is that still under wraps at this stage?
Well, there's so many different things. I think the underlying theme, I started with the theme of being childlike, and you know, we've talked about that already. The title I'm leaning towards, there's no original idea under the sun. So I come up with what I think is the most amazing name. I Google it and someone's already got it. So it was, another name was The Upside, which there's actually a docu-series on people with Down syndrome and their life. So it's kind of like a reality TV show. So I'd recommend people watch that. But finding the upside is one of the themes I'm looking at the moment. So finding the upside of not just Down syndrome, but finding the upside of life and being optimistic and resilient, and that's very much an underlying theme to the book.
And what do you hope that people take from the book after reading it upon reflection?
Yeah, wow. Another good question. You're the man for the job. I think probably answers to the same question that I asked myself all those years ago was, I think the first question was, how can I be more like my brother? But I think really the question for me is, how can I find happiness? Like, I looked at my brother, and he endured so much hardship and pain through his life, and yet he never complained. He was never bitter. He never gossiped. He never took it on. He was just always happy and smiling and resilient. And I thought, wow, like how is that possible? And how do I be like that person? So hopefully what people would get out of reading that book is I think the principles that you can put in place to find happiness no matter what happens in life, and also how we can see the best in people. I think it's no coincidence that half the book is dedicated to the topic of empathy. And that's probably the biggest thing I learned from my brother, is accepting people who are different.
I read something recently and it said, do you remember, you know, what your high school certificate score was, or do your university ATAR,
yeah,
or how many applicants you beat in your first job? And then there was other questions like, do you remember a teacher that helped you through a difficult time, or the person who's made the most difference in your life, or the moment that made you just ecstatically happy? You know, those things of where we help each other and connect and empathize and show human compassion and just be a part of humankind are the things that actually are the most meaningful to us, really. We mightn't realize it at a point in time in our lives when we're chasing the big dollars or the big job or the grand house, but at heart, I think all of us need that human compassion, human empathy and human kindness to sort of see us all through life, really.
That's such a valid point. I think so. There was research done, I'm not sure if it began at Harvard or not, but in terms of this answering the question of, you know, everlasting happiness, and number one on the list is the quality of your relationships. So exactly what you just said, having strong relationships with friends and family has the biggest impact on our level of happiness in life.
Definitely. Is there much about the experiences of people who are deaf woven through your book at all at this stage?
Not as much, I think, because I definitely have my closest relationship was with my brother, who was like my best friend. And especially there came a point in time, it could have been months or years before he passed. I actually don't know in terms of the quantity of time, but there was a moment when he came home from a hospital visit and we'd basically got the news that his time was running out. So he was on dialysis treatment and it was no longer working, and the doctors had said to make the most of the time you've got left. So I think from that moment on, I made a conscious effort to, it felt like I spent every single day with my brother. So and within those couple months or years, I think we shared a lifetime of memories, and it's probably that specific time that this book is focused on. So I think that's definitely why it's more geared towards my brother in that aspect,
Yeah, totally. That's very moving and very impactful, and it sounds like it'll be a very insightful and thought-provoking read. I'm keen to have a read of it myself when it's published. I'm sure you've done a fine job of the production of the books.
You'll get a first draft. I'm doing an audio book at the moment too, I'll send it your way.
A sneak peek, eh? Yeah. That'd be cool. How have you applied your life experiences, Matt, to your job as a youth worker?
Yeah, so I think I mentioned earlier on empathy and accepting people who are different. So that's probably it for sure. I think that youth get a bit of a, what would you say, a negative rap. We kind of judge them a bit harshly. And I still remember when I was teaching a class, it would have been year eight, and one of the boys, I'll have to paraphrase exactly what he said, but he basically said that they expect us to be like grown-ups, but they treat us like kids. So again, as a parent with a young child, we talk baby talk, like goo goo gaga, and we play hide and seek and peekaboo and all these things. But when kids become teenagers, they kind of just skip, and we expect them to be adults and act maturely when your brain doesn't fully stop developing till can be mid-20s or 30s now, they're saying, in terms of your prefrontal cortex and decision making. So really, you know, teenagers don't fully grow up, and they're still going to be teenagers and make mistakes, and yet we judge them harshly for that. So I think for me, I was very understanding of young people as a youth worker, for sure. So when they were around me, I think they felt safe because they felt accepted for who they were. And I think that people show you their best when they feel safe. Mm. And so the same kids, you know, my office was right out the front of the maths kind of classrooms, and the same kids that were kicked out of class every single day for disruptive behavior or were suspended for fighting would shake my hand at the start of every day and were so respectful to me, would walk around the school and pick up rubbish with me, and they volunteered their own time on weekends to come and cook a barbecue at the local community markets. They helped clean up at the morning breakfast club. So same kid, right? But completely different outcomes in terms of their behavior. So I think my approach as a youth worker was definitely what I learned from my brother, Gaz, to accept people and make them feel safe, and that'll bring out the best in them.
Wise words and impactful words there, and a lesson for us all. Bring out the best in people and they will show you their best.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And when we're all doing our best, I guess society's a better place at large.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Well, thanks for joining me, Matt, and sharing some of your fabulous insights. It's been a true pleasure having you on the podcast today, and I hope society really takes something from your book.
Yeah, thank you very much, and it's been an absolute privilege to be here, and shout out to you for all you're doing as well, and I really look forward to listening to future episodes, man, so reach out anytime.
No worries. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, bro.